happy birthday today to Marcella Etichen, or Estichen, of Sioux City, to Deborah S. Arnold of Des Moines, to Pamela Stewart of Des Moines, and to Blair Higgins of Council Bluffs. Happy birthday to all of you. You're joined today in a birthday by Ernie Isley of the Isley Brothers, who's turning 72, and by opera singer Denise Graves, who turns 60 today. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service. If you're hearing us on your television or Iowa PBS and you are not a registered IRIS user, please give us a call at 515-243-6833 so we can get you on our list. We need to know who's listening in order to keep our services free. And now, here's Linda with our obituaries.
Jerry Frank Burns, 89, departed this life March 4th at the retirement community Brio of Johnston in Johnston. Jerry was born August 11, 1934, in Wayne County to John and Maxine Rogers Burns. Jerry and Phyllis Petty were married February 28, 1954, at the Lineville Assembly of God Church. They were married 66 years until Phyllis's death in 2020. Jerry grew up with his parents, an older brother Robert, and two younger sisters, Betty and Karen, near Clio, Iowa. Jerry began his education at the famous Little Red Schoolhouse on U.S. Highway 65. In 1952, he graduated from Lineville High School. After graduating high school, Jerry farmed with his father and brother until continuing his education at Missouri State University in Springfield, Missouri. After receiving his BS in education, Jerry continued his schooling and received his master's degree in elementary school administration from the University of Missouri, his special education administration degree from the University of South Dakota, graduate degree in school psychology from the University of Nebraska, as well as postgraduate studies at the University of Colorado. His desire for knowledge never ended. Jerry's career spanned 32 years, retiring in 1991. He began as an elementary teacher and assistant principal in Des Moines. He later worked in Warren, Madison, and Marion counties as a school psychologist and concluded his career as coordinator and assistant director of special education at Heartland Area Education Agency. Besides helping children learn and develop, Jerry was also known for his willingness to volunteer. His self-taught expertise in technology, computers, and programs was vital to coworkers needing assistance with this new and ever-changing field. Jerry was always willing and able to lend a hand, thanks to his innate drive for knowledge. Jerry was a devout Christian his whole life. He became a member of the Assembly of God Church as a young adult. He was a member of New Hope Assembly of God Church in Urbandale. He enjoyed giving back with his willingness to serve and volunteer in many facets through this stewardship. Jerry's favorite pastime activities and hobbies included technology, photography, cooking, ceramics, and gardening. During the summers, he enjoyed following his great-nephew Nick's golf tournaments and taking daily walks around his neighborhood. Most importantly, he enjoyed genealogy, which led to tracing his ancestors back to being first voyagers on the Mayflower, thereby honoring him as a member of the esteemed and exclusive General Society of the Mayflower Descendants. He is survived by his sisters, Betty Empey and Karen partner Jim Pittman. He is also survived by his brother-in-law, Ames partner Thelma Petty. He is survived by cousins Alice Lennington, Dale Burns, Donna Hopwood, Gary Burns, Cecil Barclay, and Wanda White. Also surviving are nephew John, partner Amy Pittman, Tom, partner Karen Petty, and nieces Susan, partner Stephen Moore, Anita, partner David Kelso, and Amanda, partner Jared Martin, as well as many great and great-great nieces and nephews. Jerry was preceded in death by his wife Phyllis, parents John and Maxine, and his brother Robert. Jerry will be remembered by all who knew him for his quiet, gentle, and kind personality. May he rest in peace. Visitation will be Saturday, March, home, Westover Chapel. Funeral services will be held immediately thereafter at 11 a.m. with Reverend James Weaver officiating. Burial will take place afterwards at the Clio Cemetery in Clio, Iowa. Memorials may be directed to the New Hope Assembly of God Church in Urbandale. Sandra Sorensen Parmenter, age 88, passed away peacefully at her home in Elkhart. A celebration of life will be held at the Big Oak Barn on 64th Street in Elkhart on March 10th from 2 to 3 p.m. She's survived by her children, John Henry, partner Teresa Parmenter, Kathy Warrington, and Roy Parmenter, her daughter-in-law, Kathy Parmenter, her grandchildren, Tracy, partner Brian Kirtley, Kelly, partner Tony Sievers, Elizabeth, partner Taz Wagner, Sandy Jane, partner Shannon Morlang, John Parmenter Jr., Eric, partner Kelsey Parmenter, and Michelle, partner Matthew Johnson, and 14 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that memorial contributions be made to the Ronald McDonald House in honor of her near-daily trips to McDonald's. And from Warwick, after a courageous battle with cancer, Stephen Feldhacker passed away peacefully at his home. He is survived by his wife, Gloria, two stepchildren, Joe, partner Jesse, of Rhode Island, and Arlene, of Florida, and seven grandchildren. His mother, Shirley Feldhacker, of Urbandale, sister Julie, of Des Moines, brother Mike of Omaha, sister Pam of Raleigh, North Carolina, and brother Joe, partner Missy, of Waukee, a niece and two nephews. Stephen was preceded in death by his father Robert and brother Mark. The family will hold a private interment at a later date.
Returning now to news from USA Today, that is included in the front page section of the Des Moines Register. Haley suspends presidential campaign. Nikki Haley announced Wednesday she was suspending her 2024 presidential campaign after suffering disappointing losses across the country on Super Tuesday. Haley's exit paved the way for former President Donald Trump to coast to the GOP nomination, all but guaranteeing a rematch of the 2020 election against President Joe Biden. Haley told a crowd in Charleston, South Carolina, the state she used to govern, that she has what she said are no regrets. "I'm filled with the gratitude for the outpouring of support we've received from all across this great country, but the time has now come to suspend my campaign," she said in a brief speech on Wednesday morning. Haley said she will continue to promote the values she campaigned on, lowering the national debt, a smaller federal government, term limits for lawmakers, standing by allies in Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, and turning away from division. "Although I will no longer be a candidate, I will not stop using my voice for the things I believe in," she said. Haley told her supporters she launched her campaign for Americans to have their voices heard. I sought the honor of being your president, but in our great country, being a private citizen is privilege enough in itself, she added. From the bottom of my heart, thank you, America, she said. She was the first woman to win a Republican presidential primary with victories in the District of Columbia and Vermont. In Vermont, she defeated Trump by nearly 3,000 votes, winning 9 delegates. Haley was also the first Indian American woman to run in the GOP race. Haley declined to immediately endorse Trump. In all likelihood, he will be the Republican nominee, she acknowledged. I congratulate him and wish him well. I wish anyone well who would be America's president, she said. Our country is too precious to let our differences divide us, she added. A United Nations ambassador under Trump's administration, Haley towed the Trump line early in her campaign. At the first GOP debate in August, she even said she would support him as the party's nominee if he were a convicted felon. However, she sharpened her rhetoric in the final weeks as she courted independent-minded voters. Although Haley insisted that she was not anti-Trump, she described him as a disaster for the Republican Party, unstable and unhinged, using her words. Haley said Wednesday she has always been a conservative Republican and always supported the Republican nominee, but added on this question, as she did on so many others, Margaret Thatcher provided some good advice when she said, never just follow the crowd, always make up your own mind. It is now up to Trump to earn the votes of those in the Republican Party and beyond who did not support him, she said. I hope he does that. Biden immediately made an appeal to Haley's base. The president said in a statement that there is a place in his campaign for Haley supporters, whom he said Trump does not want. This winter, Trump said anyone who donated to Haley was a MAGA non grata. I know there is a lot we won't agree on, but on the fundamental issues of preserving American democracy, on standing up for the rule of law, on treating each other with decency and dignity and respect, on preserving NATO and standing up to America's adversaries, I hope and believe we can find common ground, Biden said. The president's long-shot competitor, Minnesota Representative Dean Phillips, suspended his own campaign Wednesday on X, formerly Twitter. Phillips asked his supporters to help keep a man of decency and integrity in the White House. That's Joe Biden. Let's use invitation, not confrontation, to welcome Haley supporters, Phillips said. Excuse me. Though Haley hinted that she wanted an olive branch, Trump was not exactly magnanimous in victory. He said, Nikki Haley got trounced last night in record-setting fashion, despite the fact that Democrats, for reasons unknown, are allowed to vote in Vermont and various other Republican primaries. That's what Trump said on a Truth Social post. He also used the Haley news to make a fundraising pitch, telling donors in the text that it was time to unify the party. Trump did not get around to inviting Haley voters to back him, saying Biden is their mutual enemy. In a surprise, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell formally endorsed Trump Wednesday morning, despite the long-running enmity and estrangement between the two men. McConnell will be stepping down from his, McConnell will be stepping down from his leadership role in November. It is abundantly clear that former President Trump has earned the requisite support of Republican voters to be our nominee for President of the United States. It should come as no surprise that as nominee, he will have my support, McConnell said in a statement. McConnell touted major conservative wins he and Trump achieved during his presidency, including the 2017 tax reform bill and what McConnell called a generational change of our federal judiciary, including the Supreme Court. I look forward to the opportunity of switching from playing defense against the terrible policies the Biden administration has pursued to a sustained offense geared toward making real differences in the improvement and improving the lives of the American people, he said. McConnell's announcement, following a series of private talks among aides to the combative Republican leader, who was not spoken in years, the Senate GOP leader blamed Trump for the insurrection. Let me start this again, that paragraph again. Maybe if I can read it a little bit more clearly. McConnell's announcement followed a series of private talks among aides to the combative Republican leaders who had not spoken in years. They're referring to the Trump and McConnell aides but that Trump and McConnell have not spoken in years. The Senate GOP leader blamed Trump for the insurrection of January 6, 2021, calling it a disgraceful dereliction of duty. In turn, Trump accused McConnell of disloyalty. Trump got a smaller symbolic endorsement as well. Representative Ralph Norman, a Republican of South Carolina, the only House Republican to have endorsed Haley, told reporters Wednesday morning that he intends to support Trump 100%.
Five things Biden must do in big speech. Improving perceptions by voters is major goal. It's not just another speech. Standing before a joint session of Congress and addressing what may be his largest TV audience of the year, President Joe Biden faces the challenge of his political lifetime today, in resetting a re-election year that has many Democrats frantic and Republicans smug. There are times when the annual State of the Union is an opportunity for a president to unveil ambitious policy proposals, build public support behind them, and forge bipartisan coalitions to enact them. This is not one of those times. With the election 8 months away and former President Donald Trump pulling a bit ahead in most national polls, the speech stands as the prime moment for Biden to convince Americans they shouldn't evict him from the White House. He needs not only to pivot to the center on immigration, but also to allay a progressive base that has been fractured over the plight of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. He has to claim credit for brightening economic news while indicting Republicans for the national firestorm over abortion rights. Most difficult of all, he must turn around an impression of himself that already has been set among most Americans. Here's what he needs to do. The headline, Appear Wiser, Not Just Older. This time, the single most important thing isn't what Biden says. It's how he says it and how he looks. Biden's age, he's 81, is impervious to political spin. He started his term as the oldest president in American history, and in speech and gait, he has visibly aged since then. Nearly three-fourths of registered voters told a Siena New York Times poll last week that he was too old to be effective in office. Depicting Biden as mentally and physically infirm is a basic part of Trump's campaign strategy, even though the likely Republican nominee is only 4 years younger, at 77. In his address, Biden can try to convey that age has also brought wisdom. He can project vigor and confidence from the moment he steps into the House chamber. He can use humor and crispness to diffuse Americans' concerns about his acuity. The next topic, pivot on immigration. As a flood of migrants has created chaos on the southern border and a crisis on city streets across the country, immigration has replaced the economy as the most damaging issue for Biden. He has been laying the groundwork to announce new and tougher policies. That may help him attract centrist voters, but it also carries the risk of alienating others who accuse him of adopting approaches that they and Biden decried as inhumane during the Trump administration. Biden already embraced a major shift on immigration this year when he backed a foreign aid bill that would have allowed the Department of Homeland Security to close the border if too many migrants were trying to cross it and expedited the repatriation of migrants who failed to win asylum. The measure passed the Senate, but was scuttled in the House after Trump complained it would be another gift to the radical left Democrats, addressing a problem that was paying off for Republicans. Next topic, abortion, abortion, abortion. Since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022, more than a dozen states have banned all or most abortions. In other states, including conservative ones like Kansas, voters have moved to protect abortion access. The issue delivered for Democrats in last year's midterm elections, a major factor in denying Republicans the red wave they had predicted. Last month, the Alabama Supreme Court recognized embryos as children, a decision that imperiled standard in vitro fertilization treatments. The furor that followed sent Trump and other Republicans scrambling for cover. While Trump has nearly swept the GOP's nominating contest this year, those election returns have carried some warning signs among independent voters, a group that largely supports reproductive rights. Trump has urged negotiations on the issue, floating the idea of a ban on abortion at 15 weeks of pregnancy that would allow exceptions in cases of rape, incest, or to save the life of the mother. Biden, a devout Catholic, has had his own reservations about abortion in the past. Now, politically speaking, he needs to put himself firmly on the side of abortion rights and paint Trump squarely on the other side. Many of the experts who predicted a recession was all but inevitable now acknowledge the economy has managed to make a soft landing instead, with the job market strong and inflation beginning to temper. Americans are starting to believe them. The monthly University of Michigan survey of consumer sentiment rose 16 percentage points in December and 13 more points in January, the biggest consecutive increases since 1991. So far, that rosier outlook hasn't done much to boost the president, whose approval rating remains mired at a dismal 38.1%, according to recent national polls averaged by 538.com. A majority of Americans, 56.2%, disapprove of the job he's doing as president. Count on Biden to tout the impact of the huge $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill he pushed through Congress in 2021. Only now is ground being broken on many of the projects designed to provide safe drinking water, expand internet access, repair bridges, and boost public transit. The last topic, get the band back together. Biden's Electoral College victory in 2020 was narrow, dependent on small margins in a handful of states, Arizona, Georgia, Nevada, and Wisconsin, among them. While Trump has held his losing coalition together, Biden has watched his winning coalition erode. An overwhelming 91% of registered voters who said they voted for Trump in 2020 plan to vote for him again in November, according to aggregated national polls over the past 6 months by Marquette Law School. But among Biden's 2020 voters, only 81% plan to vote for him again. The good news for Biden is he lost ground not to Trump, but rather to, quote, someone else, an unnamed third-party candidate who now claims 15% of Biden's supporters. Those voters could well be open to persuasion to come back if he can make that case.
And now we're going to pick up a short local story from the front page section before we wrap things up here. Zora owner Allen arrested after failing to appear for a hearing. Edwin Allen, the Des Moines landlord and owner of the shuttered Zora Bar and Rooftop on Ingersoll Avenue, was jailed this week in connection with a misdemeanor case he faces in Polk County. Allen, 46, was arrested Tuesday morning after failing to appear for a hearing February 29 related to a charge that he ran a disorderly house at Zora last June. Jail records show he has since been released. Allen faced a jury trial in August related to a City of Des Moines lawsuit alleging that the bar was a public safety nuisance. He also was found guilty in 2023 and fined after being convicted of a misdemeanor for allowing minors there after 9 p.m. In February, tenants at an Allen-owned building at 3612 Ingersoll Avenue complained a gas leak in one of his apartment buildings displaced them for several days. That same month, he was served with foreclosure papers on that property and others in Des Moines and Waukee after failing to pay almost $3 million in outstanding debts, Iowa court records show. First National Bank of Ames also foreclosed on an apartment building at 1721 Pleasant Street in the Sherman Hill neighborhood, a property at 3604 Ingersoll, and a home and duplex Allen purchased in Waukee, court records show. Bax Auctioneers plans an online auction through March 11 to sell kitchen items and other inventory from Zora.
Powell, no rate cuts until inflation is closer to 2%. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said Wednesday the central bank won't begin cutting its key interest rate until it has gained greater confidence that inflation is moving substantially toward its 2% goal, noting the move will likely occur this year. His comments in prepared remarks delivered before the House Financial Services Committee echoed those he made at the Fed's last meeting in late January. If the economy evolves broadly as expected, it will likely be appropriate to begin dialing back policy restraint at some point this year, Powell said. But the economic outlook is uncertain, and ongoing progress towards our 2% inflation objective is not assured. As the Fed aims to help pull the U.S. economy out of an inflationary period, it's looking for more signs of restored price stability, which Powell said is essential to set the stage for achieving maximum employment and stable prices over the longer run. Powell didn't give a timetable for rate cuts, but could provide more details in response to questions from lawmakers. In the text, though, Powell said inflation has eased substantially, and he did not mention a recent rebound in monthly price increases that led some economists to push back their forecast of the first rate decrease to later in the year. That could be a positive signal that Fed officials are not overly concerned by the price spike. In January, inflation overall rose 0.3%, while a core measure that excludes volatile food and energy items increased 0.4%, both substantially higher than the recent trend, according to the Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, the Fed's preferred gauge. But those readings still push down annual inflation to 2.4% and the core yearly measure to 2.8%. PCE inflation peaked at a 40-year high of 7% in June 2022. Future markets now predict the Fed will start lowering its benchmark rate in June and trim it by a quarter percentage point four times, from a 22-year high of 5.25% to 5.5% to a range of 4.25% to 4.5%.
And that brings us to the end of this shift. For the last 90 minutes, your readers have been Linda Lundgren and me, Twyla Glenn. It's been our pleasure to read for you. Now we'll take a short break to allow our next readers to get into place.
Welcome back. Your new readers are Teresa Whitaker and Dorothy Huckenberg. And we'll continue with articles from the Des Moines Register and USA Today. And we'll start with the opinions. So here's Dorothy with our first opinion.
Our first opinion today is from Jamie Farr, which is a guest columnist, and he is a deputy sheriff with the Scott County Sheriff's Department and a school resource officer at Pleasant Valley High School. He has been an SRO for the past 5 years and holds the highest certification for SROs, NASRO practitioner. His title is Protect Children from Flavored Disposable Vapes. As a school resource officer in Iowa, I've been on the front lines of the battle against youth vaping. Despite the FDA's commendable 2020 ban on certain flavored vapes, our communities continue to grapple with the alarming prevalence of illegal flavored disposable vapes among our youth. The FDA's ban on youth-appealing flavored vapes was a step in the right direction, acknowledging the dangers these enticing flavors pose to our young people. However, the agency's failure to enforce the ban effectively has allowed an illicit market to thrive. The crux of the issue lies in the FDA's understaffing, preventing them from policing the flood of illegal products entering our communities. Compounding the problem is the lack of clear communication between the FDA and retailers. Many vendors remain in the dark about which products are legal or illegal to sell, inadvertently contributing to the proliferation of these dangerous vaping products. We must provide tools that help retailers keep these illegal products off store shelves and help enforcement agencies to keep them out of the hands of children. Recent findings from the 2023 CDC Youth Tobacco Study reveal a disturbing truth. The two most popular vaping products among our youth are illegal flavored vapes, Elf Bar and Escobar, both produced in unregulated factories in China and sold in flavors such as orange pear nectar and berry mix. Our children are being drawn into a dangerous habit, one that could have lifelong consequences on their health. Thankfully, the Iowa legislature is taking steps toward closing these regulatory gaps. House Study Bill 682 and Senate File 2402 would establish a registry of only those vaping products that the FDA allows to be on the market. Any stores selling illegal flavored disposable vapes that are not on the directory would face crippling penalties, effectively taking these products off the shelves and out of the hands of Iowa youth. A vaping directory provides the clarity needed for retailers and wholesalers on what vaping products can be legally sold and gives law enforcement the ability to stop the flow of illegal, kid-friendly, disposable vaping products that are flooding our schools and stores. I urge you to have conversations with your children, family, and friends about these illegal flavored vapes to ensure your loved ones know the dangers of these products. Furthermore, contact your legislators and ask them to support Senate File 2402 to keep illegal flavored vapes out of the hands of our youth. The stakes are high, and the time for action is now. Let's work together to create a safer, healthier future for our children. Again, that by Jamie Faw, Deputy Sheriff with Scott County Sheriff Department.
And now we'll go to letters to the editor. Our first letter is from the Reverend Norma Cook Everest of Mason City. If you serve the public, you must serve the public. I am troubled that Iowa lawmakers passed a Religious Freedom Restoration Act. This bill certainly does not restore religious freedom. The First Amendment is meant for all. What if a business owned by a Muslim woman would serve only women who wore hijab? What if a store owned by Jewish people served only men who wore a yarmulke on their heads? What if medical services were denied to LGBTQ people? Oh, is that the intent of the bill? Specific practices are appropriate within a faith community. However, when a place is open to the public, all must be served so that all have free exercise of religion. Second clause of First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. First clause of First Amendment. To serve everyone need not be a burden. Religious liberty refers to people of all religions in that pluralistic nation. And again, that was from the Reverend Norma Cook Everest of Mason City. Our next letter, Biden is the better old guy. Looks like it's coming down to grandpa versus grandpa in the 2024 presidential election. So who would you rather have? The old doddering one who is kind to everyone, or the crazy one who always shows up shouting and only talks about himself? Easy choice for me. And that was from Jim Walters of Iowa City. Our next letter, Republicans supported bill fosters poverty. It is so sad that the Iowa Republican Party has become so hateful and uncaring. House File 2319 would ban the guaranteed income program, Uplift, and programs like it that are trying to lift people out of poverty. By banning this $500 monthly stipend, Republicans are taking away chances to get out of poverty. Recipients could use the money for anything, such as transportation to work or help with childcare, which are necessary for people to get out of poverty. They could use the money to afford housing or for food for their families. It's scary to think Republicans might use the same rationale to do away with the food bank or other food pantries. Our state would do better if we all do better. And that letter was from Jean Ritchie of West Des Moines. Our next letter from Gerald Jordan of Johnston. So school should be like a gun show? I'm sorry, but I can't help but respond to the Register printing of a letter by Todd Blodgett, who poses the penetrating question, when was the last time a would-be, whatever that is, shooter, opened fire at a gun show? I'm assuming he is in favor of potential shooting gallery in the schoolroom with everyone armed just like a gun show. Again, that was from Gerald Jordan. Current extreme weather is just what's been predicted. Right now, the upper Sierra Mountains of California are getting 10 feet of snow with 100 mile per hour winds. But as well, Texas is hot, windy, and very dry. It is therefore having its largest wildfire in history. Dubuque has had the warmest March 3rd on record by 5 to 10 degrees. It's winter in America with the new normal. The new normal is that there is no normal. During the 1980s, it was predicted by climate scientists that global warming would result in extremes in weather, not just the occasional extremes, but their more frequent occurrence in different parts of the world or country, and sometimes at the same time. Welcome to the Anthropocene. That was from Gerald Eagleson of Dubuque. Our next letter, government isn't required to deal with unions. I disagree with State Representative Sammy Sheets saying in an essay in the Register that Senate File 2374 strikes at the heart of fundamental rights. I agree that workers, including public employees, have a right to form a union as part of a fundamental right to freedom of association and to peaceably assemble. But that right does not include any right to force our government to negotiate with or even recognize a union as a bargaining unit. If our government establishes laws allowing or requiring governments to recognize and negotiate with public employee unions, those laws may be amended or abolished. Neither side of an employee-employer relationship should be able to use force, including the force of government, to require the other side to agree to anything. The association should be voluntary. And that was from Kurt Johnson of Urbandale. And our last letter from David Russell in Ames. Joni Ernst's tale of woe is a profile in cowardice. It was touching and a little sad to read that Senator Joni Ernst admitted at a Boone event that she didn't have the courage to vote for the bipartisan border deal, even though she supported it. That was in February 24th's article. Despite the excuses she makes, the fact is she didn't have the nerve to go against Donald Trump and his very vocal supporters. They opposed the deal because it would actually improve the situation at the border when Trump wanted chaos there so he could blame Democrats and run on the issue. The bill failed by one vote. Ernst could have made the difference, if only she had the courage to vote her conscience, like her fellow Republican, the late John McCain, did when he bucked his party to save the Affordable Care Act by one vote. She blamed the public for making it hard for her to do the right thing. But most Iowans want revamped border and immigration policies. Later in the story, she named the real culprits my own colleagues, who were out there knowingly putting out misinformation about the bill because they wanted to tank it, and a former president who even before the bill was written said, it's garbage. So first she went along with Trump and her disinformation-spreading Republican colleagues, who whipped up their supporters to call her office, and now she complains she had no choice. As that former president is fond of saying, sad. And that again was from David Russell of Ames.
And now we go to the last opinion of the Register, and this is also a Your Turn opinion by Mina Candle-Y, and she teaches gender studies and anthropology at the University of Iowa. The title is Big Ten Sponsor TIAA is Major Driver of Climate Crisis. Iowa feels like the center of the world right now as millions of eyes are focused on the astonishing Caitlin Clark, who has broken the scoring record for NCAA Division I basketball and drawn unprecedented crowds of fans. This is a breathtaking moment for Iowa women's basketball. As a sponsor of the Big Ten basketball tournament, pension giant TIAA, that is Teachers Insurance and Annuity Association of America, hopes that our enthusiasm for Clark's athletic gifts will inspire warm feelings about the company. Hawkeye fans shouldn't take the bait. TIAA promotes itself as a leader in socially responsible investing, but it is in fact a leading driver of the world's climate crisis. Fostering industrial-scale deforestation and the displacement of Black and Indigenous farmers, TIAA also manages at least $78 billion of investments in coal, oil, and gas. In Brazil, TIAA owns over 1 million acres of plantations that have been raised to plant monocrops like soybeans, mostly sold to companies in Europe and China as livestock feed, destroying the most biodiverse savanna in the world. TIAA has repeatedly ignored red flags while buying tracts of land from known land grabbers in Brazil, involved in corruption scandals. One of the largest landowners in the world, TIAA rents land to operators who produce row crops with intensive chemical use that pollutes rivers and threatens community health downstream. TIAA's land grabbing began a century ago. As Van R. Newkirk II details in The Great Land Robbery, TIAA acquired its land in predominantly Black counties. In 1910, Black farmers in Mississippi owned as much as 2.1 million acres. By the middle of the 20th century, they had lost 800,000 acres of that, thanks to the U.S. Department of Agriculture practice of denying loans to Black farmers while colluding with white farmers to take that land. Who owns the land now? TIAA. The company has accumulated a portfolio in the Delta almost equal to the remaining holdings of the African Americans who have lived on and shaped this land for centuries. In Elaine, Arkansas, a TIAA subsidiary is illegally spraying toxic chemicals to support vast tracts of monocrops. Deforestation is accelerating our climate crisis, estimated to contribute 12 to 20% of emissions worldwide. But TIAA also holds investments in big oil, including Exxon, Chevron, and Shell, and in fracking giants Halliburton and ConocoPhillips. And it's the fifth largest holder of coal bonds in the world, at exactly the moment when the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has warned us to reduce coal immediately. TIAA is the biggest retirement provider for academic, research, and medical workers in the U.S. today, including faculty and staff at the University of Iowa. Given my own research and teaching on environment, cooking technologies, and sustainable practices in India, I was shocked when I first learned what TIAA was doing on my behalf and under the guise of responsible investing. Because TIAA proclaims its commitment to the environment and social justice, most of us don't realize that our savings are fueling the climate crisis. In 2021, UI's Faculty, Senate, and Staff Council passed resolutions calling for more transparency from TIAA, but it has continued to greenwashing campaign. Now it has added sports washing. It's time to tell TIAA to reinvest our money in climate-friendly firms that will speed the transition to renewable energy, sustainable agriculture, and healthy environments. Don't let them capitalize on our Hawkeye pride. Again, that was by Mina Kandelwal, who teaches gender studies and anthropology at the University of Iowa.
Okay, now we're going to turn to the sports section, and I'm going to give you a rundown on what's on TV today for sports. In college men's basketball, we have at 6 o'clock on ESPN2, UAB at Temple, on ESPNU, Kansas at Fairfield, and on FS1, Rutgers at Wisconsin. At 8 o'clock this evening on CBSSN, Sam Houston at Louisiana Tech, ESPN2, Colorado at Oregon, ESPNU, Howard at Norfolk State, and on FS1, Washington at Washington State. At 8:30 p.m. on ESPN, Arizona is at UCLA. At 10 p.m. on ESPN2, California at Stanford. On ESPNU, Utah at Oregon State. and on FS1, Arizona State at Southern Cal. And in college women's basketball, we've got some of our tournaments starting, so I'm just going to read you the Big Ten tournament schedule. At 11:30 today on BTN, 11:30 this morning on BTN, in the Big Ten tournament, we have Illinois versus Maryland in the second round, and that's in taking place in Minneapolis. At 2 p.m. on BTN, we have the winner versus Nebraska in the second round at Minneapolis. So we don't know who Nebraska's playing yet. At 5:30 p.m. on BTN in the Big Ten tournament, Wisconsin is playing Penn State in the second round. Again, that's taking place in Minneapolis. At 8 p.m. tonight on BTN, the winner of one of those matches is going to be playing Michigan in the second round in Minneapolis. And then in golf today at 1 p.m., we have the PGA Tour, the Arnold Palmer Invitational, first round at Bay Hill Golf Course in Orlando, Florida. And in Major League Baseball, you can catch some spring training games at 12 p.m. today on ESPN. We have Atlanta versus Boston, and that's in Fort Myers, Florida. And at 7 p.m. this evening on the MLBN, we have spring training game Chicago Cubs versus Cincinnati, and that's in Goodyear, Arizona. In NBA basketball, this evening at 6:30 on TNT, Miami is at Dallas. At 9 p.m. on TNT, Boston is at Denver. And you can catch NHL hockey this evening also at 6 p.m. on ESPN. We have St. Louis at New Jersey. Okay, and we have time, I think, for one sports article here. On the front page, we have the headline, Stinson Jr. leads Valley past Johnston at State, by Alyssa Hurdle. Injuries didn't completely hold back the Valley Boys basketball team on Wednesday. The reigning Class 4A state champions grew accustomed to playing with an incomplete and not healthy roster this season. So when second leading scorer Zay Robinson went through warm-ups ahead of the Iowa High School State Tournament quarterfinals in a walking boot, the Tigers weren't fazed. In the sub-state final, when Robinson goes down in the first 5 minutes, our guys didn't flinch, Valley coach B.J. Windhorst said. If we'd been healthy all year, we might have been out of sorts. Obviously, you want your whole team, but that's the way it was. Valley defeated Johnston 64-57 in the quarterfinals on Wednesday. The Tigers advanced to the semifinals to be played on Thursday at 7:15 p.m., where they will take on either Bettendorf or Cedar Falls. Curtis Stinson Jr. led the Tigers with 22 points. Kiki Deng and Trevin Jurek added 15. Robinson, who averaged 15.8 points per game, scored just 3 points in the win, but he found ways to contribute where he could, grabbing 8 rebounds. The scoring started slow, with the first points on the scoreboard coming off a pair of free throws from Stinson. Valley built off it, though. Deng scored a three-pointer, and Jarek added 2 more free throws to give the Tigers a 7-0 lead. Soon enough, Valley led by 10 points, 13-3, and it looked like the Tigers would walk away with an easy win. Johnston had other plans. The Dragons scored 7 straight points in just over a minute to cut Valley's lead to 3 points late in the first quarter. Johnston moved within 1:45 seconds into the second quarter and tied the game with 5:41 remaining in the first half. But that only served as motivation for Valley. It lights a fire, Stinson said. We were up by 10, and then they made a run. We were like, we've got to make our run now. It's the Dragons' first season with Courtney Henderson as head coach. He took Des Moines Hoover to the state tournament last season. The Dragons' starting lineup features 3 new players, Traveri Cavill, Tino Day, and Dalen Huston, and only 4 players on this season's roster were on Johnston's varsity squad in 2022-23. All the credit goes to my kids, Henderson said. I'm excited for next season because we get a full offseason. Hopefully this is the standard, being out here at the state tournament.
Okay, now we go to Dear Abby. Daughter's open marriage reveal gives parents pause. Dear Abby, my daughter and her husband have been together for 10 years, married for 3 of them. They have a 1-year-old daughter. I have just learned they may be getting a divorce. My son-in-law is very controlling, as well as verbally and emotionally abusive. He yells, swears, and slams doors over the littlest things. It has been going on for the past couple of years. My daughter deserves to be happy, and she doesn't want to raise my granddaughter in that environment. However, she just confided to me that they have been in an open marriage for the last 3 months. Both have other people in their lives. I'm having a hard time processing this. I come from the generation where that kind of thing is morally wrong, and I'm heartbroken about the whole thing. I love my daughter, and I want to support her. But if I don't, I risk losing her and my granddaughter forever. How can I cope? That is from Completely Thrown in Ohio. Abby says, Dear Throne, your daughter and son-in-law's open marriage will soon be over. Hallelujah. While you may not approve of your daughter's sexual activity, she's an adult and has the right to live her life as she sees fit. She may have been pressured into trying it. The Bible says, Judge not, lest ye be judged. I strongly recommend you try to remember and follow that dictate if you want to continue to have a relationship with your daughter and grandchild. She may need all of the emotional support she can get. The next letter is, Dear Abby, I have 4 sisters. I have felt like the odd one out my entire life, and they know it. They gossip about me and my children at every opportunity. They are all financially well off. I am not. They take trips and get together frequently, but don't include me because they think I can't afford it. When I have made my feelings known, they say I'm too sensitive and a drama queen. I told them they don't have the right to look down on me and judge. How can I get them to stop being so superior and accept me and my children? I have been a widow for 5 years after a long and abusive marriage. They accuse me of exaggerating the mental and emotional abuse I experienced. How can I make them understand? And that is from Excluded Sis in Nebraska. Abby says, Dear Sis, you wrote that you have felt like the odd one out your entire life, and that your sisters know it. You also stated that they travel together without including you because they think you can't afford it. If that's true, do you think they should have paid for your fare? If you do, it's presumptuous. After a long and abusive marriage, you must feel like you have been let out of jail. For your sisters to dismiss what you experienced as exaggerations is insensitive and cruel. Because you aren't going to change them, eliminate them from your life. They may be unwilling or unable to give you the inclusion and acceptance you seek from them. And that is from Dear Abby.
And that brings us to the end of the Des Moines Register for today. I'm Teresa Whitaker, and my partner at the microphone has been Dorothy Hockenberg. Earlier, you heard from Linda Lundgring and Twyla Glenn. You can listen to IRIS programs on any computer or smart device at any time at iowaradioreading.org. Support for today's readings comes from the Des Moines Register, Iowa Public Radio, Iowa PBS, and bensoundmusic.com. Thank you for listening to IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.